And you are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. And maybe you're even on the road, like from New Zealand to British Columbia. Maybe you're going to spend the weekend in Seychelles. Maybe we'll meet and maybe we won't. Maybe you are in Montpellier, maybe in East 66th Street in New York, or you could be right here in our community, which makes so much sense since we're the ones who benefit by the amazing arts that fill our region. It is time for Arts Live and Local. I'm going to start right out with my first guest, and that would be Dr. Robert Michael Pyle, a.k.a. Bob Pyle to most of us locally. But when you're looking for his books, you have to put the formal name in.
Right. You'd be surprised how many Bob Pyles are writing books, Carol.
Oh, it could be.
There are a few.
And it's spelled P-Y-L-E.
Oh, yes.
So, actually, Bob didn't write this book just now, but the exciting news is that there is a new edition. The book is Where Bigfoot Walks, Crossing the Dark Divide. And it's very exciting. Well, it's exciting to publish a book. It's exciting to have a new edition published. And it's also exciting for it to happen on a particularly auspicious date. And Bob is here. First, I'll just let you know, tonight he will be at Kala. That's 1017 Marine Drive in Astoria. And the reading and signing, and really a pie social?
Yes, that's what Dinah says.
Oh, good. Starts at 7:30, but he's going to fill you in because there may be more to it than that. So welcome, Bob. Welcome back, I should say.
Thank you, Carol. It's so nice to be back here.
Always love having you here. So I alluded to this 50th anniversary, but I want you to tell folks what it is.
Indeed. Well, there's a couple of anniversaries. I was just listening prior to your program to E-Town and remembering it was 1995, 22 years ago, when I took this book on to E-Town, talked with Nick Forster about it.
I did not know that.
Been a long time.
Wow.
And so it's out again because a lot of things have happened in the Bigfoot world. But today in particular, and I've brought them up to date in the new edition, but today in particular is the biggest day on the Bigfoot calendar for a long time. October 20th, 1967, was the day that the famous Patterson-Gimlin film was made by Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin, two Yakima cowboys down at Bluff Creek, California, leading to the picture that's come to be known as Patty, probably one of the most widely recognized images in the world, I should think. I saw it on a BBC ad the other day. So, I mean, Patty is everywhere.
Is that this picture
that's
that
the
I'm
picture
looking at
that
right
you
now?
Have right there. It's a famous picture of the chunky Bigfoot female turning around toward the camera. And that's the one frame from the film that's in the public domain. So people have seen it. Most people have seen the film. But it was 50 years ago today that that film was made. And so there's giant parties going on in California. Willow Creek, California is a madhouse today. But I decided to celebrate that birthday right here at home at Kala in Astoria.
Okay, now we should back up a little bit because I said everybody knows you, but I should mention it. Maybe people are already aware. Bob is an author, obviously, and of many books, an ecologist, a naturalist, and Dr. Bob Pyle, or Robert Michael Pyle, has taken people on tours, very interesting tours, too, wasn't there? The Beer and Birds tour.
Oh, we did the Birds and Beers of Britain.
Birds
yes,
and
that
beers
was a fun
of Britain.
One.
Yeah. So he has quite, and Monarch Butterflies or something, he's quite well known for internationally. So a lot of people are going, Bigfoot? I mean, does everybody know what Bigfoot is? We do, and Sasquatch, and do people still go, oh, no, you're kidding me?
Far less so, Carol. When I first got the contract to write the book, I had friends telling me, don't do it. It'll ruin your reputation, drag you down, and so on. It hasn't happened that way. And in fact, people are, I find, far more open to discussing it, to sharing their stories, and to having an open mind about its actual existence, which was not the main point of my book, now than they were 20 years ago.
Why? What happened?
I think because there's been so much of it. I think the Finding Bigfoot show on Animal Planet, which is a funny one, but it's got a serious note to it. I think a lot of people have seen that. I think there's so many stories, so many track findings, that people are smart people are beginning to realize that maybe we dismiss this out of hand at our peril, that there might actually be something to it. And not only that, but everybody wants there to be a boogeyman beyond the campfire.
True enough. What inspired you? You said your original reason was not to prove whether or not Bigfoot existed.
At the very end of our talk, I'm going to give you my main point, but let me say this.
Let me get a reading
from the beginning of the book.
Yeah, please.
And forgive this. Something is definitely afoot in the forests of the Pacific Northwest. Either an officially undescribed species of hominoid primate dwells there, or an act of self and group deception of astonishing proportions is taking place. In any case, the phenomenon of Bigfoot exists. Whether the animals themselves are becoming scarcer, or whether they even walk as corporeal creatures at all, their reputation and cult are only growing. More and more people, including credible and skeptical citizens and scientists, as well as the gullible, the wishful, and the wacko, believe that giant hairy monsters are present in our midst. So it was that basic premise.
Now, did you write that for this new edition, or
no,
was that your original?
This is the first words in the original edition.
Okay.
Everything in the book is intact except for the new last chapter where I brought things up to date, mm-hmm. bracketed by two dramatic footprint experiences I've had since I wrote the first edition.
Well, I'm sitting here on my side of the counter, and you're on your side, and between us is this big thing. This is mm-hmm. what I couldn't figure out what it was, some kind of a sculpture. Tell us.
This is a cast that was taken from the line of tracks putatively left by Patty, by the Bigfoot that was filmed by Patterson Gimlin in 1967. So this cast was taken from the ground at Bluff Creek 50 years ago, I think day after tomorrow. That's when the researchers got there to investigate the site. So this is, if it's genuine, it's a cast from the actual foot of the actual animal in the film. It's undergone a great deal of analysis by anatomists. And one of the most experienced primate anatomists in the world, Grover Krantz at Washington State University, said either it's real or it was faked by someone who knows more about primate foot anatomy than I do, and no one does.
Whoa.
Yes.
Wow.
But I've had three track findings of my own, and they left me at the end of the book when I first wrote it with my mind open. And then in the subsequent 20 years, I had two additional findings in the same area, same dimensions, that speak to the possibility of the same animal over 20 years on the same home range.
So now, did you tell us why you started to
begin with? No, I didn't really. Actually, it was the idea. I've always been a naturalist and interested in that, which we haven't yet discovered. But that's common. It was really the teachings of Professor Bill Holm at the University of Washington about the Northwest Native Americans and how all of them, all the way from the Athabascans to the Hoopa and everybody in between, not only had Bigfoot stories, but to a person, if they still live by the land and the water, believed in the animal as a literal animal like beaver, bear, and mink, as opposed to sea pseudolus, sea serpent, or something from the spirit realm. And I've had that confirmed for me by many, many Native Americans since then. So that was what really first got me. And after that, it was meeting a few sensible Bigfoot researchers and finding that they had really something to share. After that, I was lucky to get a Guggenheim Fellowship to write the book, which is stranger than the existence of the animal, if you ask me. but it gave me the time to spend mm-hmm. a year in Bigfoot studies and then to go into the field, not looking for Bigfoot, but into the wild, wild area known as the Dark Divide in the southern Washington Cascades to look for my sense of what this might be about, having steeped myself in Bigfoot studies for a long time.
And I mentioned the butterflies. What is your main focus? Because some of your beautiful books have been right here in Grays River, and you write in such detail about the natural environment. It's absolutely luscious and gorgeous. And as I've said before, I have always needed to read one small chapter at a time because it is so rich. And now you're doing all this poetry. Have you written any poems about Bigfoot?
Well, it's funny. I have. There's not time to read it now, but I'm going to read it tonight at my reading.
Okay.
I'll read it at the library, too. Let's mention that from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock today, I'll be doing a free public Q&A session. I'm not going to be signing books or lecturing or really reading much. It'll be reading the stories and questions from the people. And I very much hope that some children will come to that.
And where is that?
That's at the public library,
Astoria Library. On 10th Street and Exchange.
Right. And I will read my Bigfoot poem there.
Okay. Okay.
But that you asked my main focus, Carol. My PhD was in the ecology and biogeography of butterflies. But that's transferable knowledge. Science is transferable. So when I speak to the sixth graders from Rainier, Oregon every year at the CISPUS Center for their outdoor school, I give them a bit of butterflies and then a bit of Bigfoot. They have to have their vegetables first. And when I'm talking about the butterflies, and there's a chapter in here, too, that does this. It's called Ghost Moths at Moonrise. I talk about how extraordinary and bizarre and, if one didn't know better, unbelievable butterfly and moth biology can be. Their metamorphosis and everything else.
Right,
and then I say, is this really any stranger than an unnamed hominoid in our midst, whereas there are thought to be four of these species in Asia? It's not strange biologically. The only thing strange is that we don't actually have definitive evidence.
Mm-hmm. I notice now you said butterflies and Bigfoot, and then you've done birds and beer. So you're you've got the bees in there.
Yeah, I'm a generalist. I love Virgil's Georgics. You know, I'm a generalist out there.
I love putting that together, though, the butterflies, and showing how extraordinary that is, because we all, I think all children grew up with the caterpillar and the moths and the butterflies.
Sure.
And we were fascinated. And so, yeah, why not?
And we know what really happens. But if someone came to you and said, this happens in nature, and you hadn't seen it, you'd be at least as incredulous as you would about this thing.
Right. So what has changed in the last 20 years?
Besides people being a lot more open and there being a great many more stories, I was up in the Dark Divide a couple of weeks ago on butterfly research, went into an old general store that I'd gone into during my studies, gained some stories there. And I went and I said to the proprietor, any good Bigfoot stories lately? And he said, every day, bub, every day. So there's a lot more.
Yeah.
But there's also been a lot of analysis of the Patterson-Gimlin film.
Mm-hmm.
Further analysis, extremely sophisticated, and it has not been able to be debunked. And so it remains this 16-millimeter movie made on a rented drugstore camera 50 years ago by two unsophisticated in terms of filmmaking, very sophisticated in terms of horsemanship and the outdoors, Patterson-Gimlin, it remains a linchpin in the argument here. What else has changed for me is that I came out of it with my mind open, which surprised me, and now my mind is even wider open because of subsequent experiences I've had.
Fantastic. And congratulations on the new edition. That's very exciting,
Thank you, of course.
You also... I think you wrote it, but let's see, footnote, well, maybe, human need to believe that something is out there beyond the campfire. Actually, this isn't yours. This is David Campeche wrote this when he was down on his knees or his belly looking at mushrooms and felt a presence and discovered there was a four-point buck nearby, and he wrote, there's a human need to believe that something, or maybe you wrote it, and I'm just comparing the two experiences.
We wrote very similar things.
Right.
But it's not a rare idea. It goes back to Beowulf and Grendel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All societies have boogeymen and boogeywomen. All societies have giant myths. Not meaning a mistake, as of course, but meaning a belief system.
Mm-hmm.
Even giants had giants. The Brobdingnagians in Gulliver's Travels spoke of the time of giants, and they were giant. The difference is, Carol, that this giant, this particular set of stories, might actually walk in the ground as well.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have to say, and I should probably go out on this little short paragraph about my main point for the book, and that was this. It's about wildness. If we manage to, because the Dark Divide is the biggest unprotected wild land in Washington.
And tell us where that
it's
is.
It's between Mount Adams on the east, Mount St. Helens on the west, the Cispus River on the north, and the Lewis River on the south. It is a black rock ridge of great wildness that runs through that country in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. Ancient Indian trading ground, full of Bigfoot lore, but never protected in the wilderness system. Mm. And I mean to see that happen while I'm still kicking.
All right. Good.
So I wrote this. If we manage to hang on to a sizable hunk of Bigfoot habitat, we will at least have a fragment of the greatest green treasure the temperate world has ever known. If we do not, Bigfoot, real or imagined, will vanish. And with its shadow will flee the others who dwell in that world. Looking at that tangled land, one can just about accept that Sasquatch could coexist with towns and loggers and hunters and hikers, all in proportion. But when the topography is finally tamed outright, no one will any more imagine that there are giants on the land.
Hmm. Aye, aye, aye. Well, with that, my guest, Dr. Robert Michael Pyle, or Bob Pyle, is going to be presenting right here in Astoria this evening from his newly republished book, Where Bigfoot Walks, Crossing the Dark Divide, from 5 to 6, a Q&A at the Astoria Library, and then 7:30 at Gala, and that's 1017 Marine Drive, and he will read, sign, and allegedly there's going to be a pie social too. What fun. And you've just heard some of Bob's reading. If you haven't seen him in person, do it. He is a joy and always has footnotes while he's reading, which are
footnotes. I promise footnotes for this one tonight. Thank you, Carol. You're so
Thank
sweet.
Thank you.
And happy birthday, Patty.
Happy birthday, Patty. If you missed the beginning of this, tell them who Patty is.
Patty is the name that's been applied to the famous Bigfoot image in the Patterson-Gimlin film, filmed 50 years ago today at Bluff Creek, California.
I love it. Today, 50 years
ago. Oh, and by the way, Bob Gimlin, who was one of the two there, is still alive.
Oh.
93, still as handsome as ever with the silver Fu Manchu and his cowboy hat, and we've become good friends. And
oh, fun.
That's a very important part of the new book, is my writing about Bob Gimlin.
Delightful, delightful. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you, Carol.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
And this is Coast Community Radio, where you get to hear such wonderful reports. And there's more coming, so do stay tuned. Playing some music from India to celebrate Diwali, the festival of lights. And when I was in India, I was treated to an extraordinary visual experience. as I was leaving a village slash town, the entire area was lit with candles only all around the village and individual houses as well as around the village. It was just absolutely gorgeous. It's a time for celebrating family as well as light. Unfortunately, apparently, there's a lot of fireworks and firecrackers, and that has affected very negatively the pollution level. So they've banned the fireworks, but you know how much good that can do. But we will wish everybody a happy Diwali. So, and now my next guest, who is a leader of people, he's a Pied Piper, as it were. Mark Mizell is here. Mark, what are you doing this time? Where are you taking the children?
Well, ultimately, we're going to end up over at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko, Nevada. But mm-hmm. we're doing a market at Broadway Middle School next weekend. Not this coming weekend, but the next weekend, October 28th and 29th. And the vendors pay a registration fee, and that registration fee goes to our travel fund. So a number of the vendors from Astoria Sunday Market, you know, where my wife and I have a booth,
right,
they're paying for a booth spot, and it's the first time we've ever done this market, and I'd love it to be a win-win situation.
In the past, you've had performances. So what made you decide? Of course, you do the market, so maybe that made you realize, duh, why don't I do this for the kids?
Well, you know, over the years, my wife and I have done the Saturday market in El Waco and the Sunday market in Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten to know a lot of people, and it's just such a – it sounds kind of corny maybe, but it's kind of a big family, and it's hard work, you know, doing those markets, and you get close to the people that you work with.
Yeah. So what's the market going to consist of? You said some of the people from the Sunday market, but
yeah,
not
everybody's
familiar.
I'll just throw out a few a few names probably a number of your listeners know. One of our favorite people, Leslie McCrae, who does sweater heads. You know, she makes these cool hats out of recycled sweaters. She's going to be there. And Dave Barthelet, who has the Gilbert Gallery there in Seaside. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful wildlife watercolor guy. He's going to be there. And quite a number of folks from Astoria. We've got about, 25, 26 people
and
lined up.
Do you have folks from Seaside as well?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, my wife's going to have a booth and a couple other folks. And there's a couple people coming over from Portland, but it's mostly a North Coast contingent.
Okay, so it's the 28th and 29th, mm-hmm. which is Saturday and Sunday. What kind of timing?
Yeah, 10 to 6 on Saturday.
That's so long.
and then 10 to 3 on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And where is it?
And it's at the Broadway Middle School gym.
Oh.
And anyway, you just go through the doors at Broadway Middle School. They're on the north end of the parking lot.
So wait, you take a left on Broadway. If you're going south, anyway, you go east.
No, don't turn on to Broadway.
How
do you
get to Broadway Middle
School? Just stay. It's on 101.
Oh, it's on 101.
And it's pretty much across the road from Josh Gostavich Surf Shop there.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people know where that is.
Okay.
And anyway, it's right on the highway. You just turn.
Okay.
I put signs
good.
Up.
Good.
And then we had a banner made. So
nice.
We're calling it the Harvest Moon Artisan Market.
Okay.
So we've got signs up along 101, and then we just had a banner made, and we'll have that out there. And I know I wrote the gal's name down. I'm having a senior moment, but the gal who who does the barbecued sandwiches, you know, at the Astoria Sunday Market. She's got a short bus that she's converted. Have you seen that? She's got a short bus that she's converted to a barbecue shack.
Oh.
And she just drives into the, you know, the food marketplace and just parks it and then, you know, sets up shop. She's going to be in the parking lot there selling barbecued stuff.
So
and
there's
then,
food.
And then you walk in and the folks who do the gelato stand at the Astoria Market, they're going to be there. And they're from Seaside.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be music?
Yeah. Brad Griswold is going to play for a couple hours on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Mercereau is going to play for a couple hours on Sunday. And I'm going blank on this guy's name. I just talked to him, you know, just kind of casually, and he said he'd come and play. He plays this sweet saxophone there at the Astoria Market. Sometimes he plays, you know, right there in front of the Liberty Theater.
Well, let me ask you, if somebody's listening to this and says, oh, man, that would be fun, are you interested in people getting in touch with you to volunteer to play some music, or do you think you have a full docket at this point?
Yeah, have them give me a call. I mean, we pretty well got it mapped out, but you know, more the merrier.
What's a good contact?
Is it safe for me to give my
cell phone out here? I don't know.
Have them call the school.
Yeah. Okay.
So. Seaside High School, 503-738-5586.
5586. I think that's a good idea. And you can get more information there, too. So this is next Saturday and Sunday, the Harvest Moon Artisan Market, 10 to 6 Saturday, 10 to 3 Sunday at the Broadway Middle School Gym on 101.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are there going to be students there as well?
Yeah. They're
helping out?
Excuse me. All the kids going on the trip have to do a shift, and there are a lot of different things that have been done. Like some of the kids worked on a sign making shift, you know, and so we got signs along the highway, and there's some others that have gone around hanging up posters, and then there will be kids working a booth. We'll be selling Costco muffins and water and, you know, and that kind of thing.
So now let's back up a little bit because, remember this, we're streaming this show worldwide. So when we talk about the Cowboy Poets Gathering in Elko, Nevada, people are going, wait, I know about the Fisher Poets Gathering. What's this Cowboy Poet Gathering? You've been doing this for years, haven't you?
Well, it all started, John Broderick and I we read about this gathering, you know, over in Elko, and he and I saw that Arlo Guthrie was going to be at the Cowboy Poetry Festival. We thought, well, man, let's get a group of students together and let's head over there. So we headed over, and with a group of, I don't know, I think we had about 35 kids. And a lot of those kids have gone on to, well, like Israel Nebaker, you know, from Blind Pilot. He was in that crew, and some other kids. Zoe Fenton was in that group.
Yeah.
But anyway, we headed down the railroad tracks to Elko, and it turns out Arlo Guthrie never showed. And I don't know if it was a deal where he decided to back out or if somebody was wishful thinking, you know.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the ironic thing is Arlo never showed, but we ended up running into all these great people over
now,
there.
Now, this has got to be a few years ago, if you're talking high school.
This was over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And we've been taking kids to this thing every 3 years for about, you know, last 20 years or so.
Fantastic. And is that kind of, was that the inspiration for the Fisher Poets in a way?
Well, you know, I think John had a pretty clear vision of the Fisher Poets thing before we went over there. And he'd been talking about that for a while, but I think he wanted to kind of maybe fine-tune a few things, you know, because there's kind of a cross-pollinization that happens, you know. There have been cowboy poetry people that have come up for the Fisher Poets thing, and vice versa, you know. John and his friends have gone down there and performed, and it's a pretty sweet thing, really.
It is. And obviously inspiring for the kids. I'm sure they're excited to now get on the bus and head to Elko, Nevada. Wow. And when does that happen?
That's we take off January 31st. We'll hop into a beautiful yellow school bus, and that'll take us over to the train station in Portland, mm-hmm. and then we'll ride the train down to Sacramento. We've got a 4-hour layover in Sacramento, and we'll wander around there a little bit, and then hop on another train that takes us up into the Sierras and, you know, across the Great Basin country, and then over to Elko, which is over in eastern Nevada. And then we'll take in the shows and so forth for a couple of days, and then we get up at this crazy hour in the morning, 3 o'clock, and catch another train and take that over to Reno, and then we catch a plane in Reno and fly up to Portland and then hop on a bus and come home.
You do have it. Well, Scott, do you have a full show this time with the kids, or are there still students applying? And do they have to have any qualifications, like they can't flunk out of school or something?
Well, I feel like if they put in the time, you know, on the preliminary stuff, mm-hmm. I feel like they paid their dues.
Right.
And you know, it just seems to work out that kids that are willing to put in the work that's involved to get prepared for something like this, they've got some skin in the game.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, and they don't want to mess it up.
Right. And then when they come back, do they do any kind of writing or?
We're slowly but surely putting together this little performance thing, and I'm not quite, it's still kind of a little bit nebulous, but one of the chaperones going along is Jerry Johnson, and she helps Dorota Haber.
Right.
And she's a dance instructor, top-notch dance instructor. She's also a Spanish interpreter. In fact, she's taking, bringing along 4 or 5 English second language, English is second language. Yeah, on this trip.
Oh, fantastic.
And,
excellent.
And one of the gals just has a gorgeous singing voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on a song, hoping to have her sing a song that Linda Ronstadt wrote.
Mm.
I don't know if you know this or not, but Linda Ronstadt has Mexican heritage.
Oh, yeah, she sings in Spanish.
Yeah.
Hear her on Sonidos Latinos.
Yeah, she and her brother wrote this song in Spanish. It's just gorgeous. And we're hoping that Erica will sing that song. And then there's some hams in the group, and I've got some ideas for some corny commercials, you know, that kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
And
nice.
And then there's a gal in the group who's quite a dancer, and Jerry's working with her, and hopefully we'll get a little dance thing together.
So this,
you know,
will be after they come back or before?
It'll be before.
Okay.
And we're kind of toying with the idea of opening the Tillamook Head Gathering with this show,
okay.
whatever it ends up being, you know. At the Tillamook Head Gathering, Max Strozzi is going to play the first half hour, and then our kids will do their thing.
And when is that?
It's the Saturday of Martin Luther King weekend.
Okay, in January. You know what, Mark? I think you need to come back and bring a kid or two. And that would be, one of the performers.
And then Brian Bovenizer and his band are going to be the star attractions at the Tillamook Head Gathering.
They're wild. That's terrific.
Yeah.
Well, this is so exciting. I love what you're doing and inspiring these kids. You never know where, you know, you plant these seeds and where they go. So it's quite wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Again, this is happening next weekend. From 10 to 6 on Saturday, 10 to 3 on Sunday. And the good news is you can just drop by. It's the Harvest Moon Artisans Market. And go ahead and pick up a gift for someone or some of the food and help support the Seaside High School students' trip with Mark Mizell and other adults, of course, to the Cowboy Poets Gathering in Elko, Nevada. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay. And speaking of Mexican music, I have something here I would like to play and remind you that next weekend is the Dia de los Muertos in Astoria. Tonight, however, is an Hispanic celebration at Chautauqua Lodge in Long Beach on the peninsula, the California peninsula. It's a fundraiser for to help out some of the local families who have been discriminated against by our government. 7 p.m. Thanks for being here, folks.
De mujeres y de hombres sin tierra, de trabajadores y de explotados, se alzan muy unidos ahora en una guerra, porque solo el pueblo siempre salva al pueblo. Los trabajadores de la clase oprimida traído un serio compromiso, liberar a un pueblo que lucha por justicia, por una patria grande latinoamericana, por una patria grande latinoamericana. Las plantaciones en barrios marginales de los cuatro puntos.
Libertad. From nuestras voces se levantan para la justicia. Our voices will rise for justice. That's what we're working on, folks. We are working on it. And you know what they say, the arc bends. We'll get there. The sooner the better. Hey, I just had a note come in that Jim Yitzty's in town, and he and friends are going to be playing tonight at the Voodoo Room. So I just thought I'd throw that one out. It starts at 9 o'clock after the movies, so at the Columbian. And we're going to be talking about movies right now, movies and music. Boy, I'm excited because I have these two terrific, hardworking people here who, one you know because he comes here every year, and that would be Ron Craig. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And Ron is the founder and the director of the Astoria International Film Festival. It's the 11th annual.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, it flies anyway, but I'm glad this is great. This is fun. And this year, I mean, I go every year because I'm so excited at these films you bring, most of which I had never heard of. And I read about them, and I enjoy, I learn, and celebrate. And I would like you, well, first let me just give logistics. The easy part about this film festival is it's all taking place in one spot. Contrary to my second guest, whom I'll introduce right now, and he's going to be talking about another festival that both of these gentlemen had hands in, and that would be Bruce Watts. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Carol.
And Bruce is the co-founder, along with Ron, of the Astoria Jazz Festival, the first annual, and that's happening next weekend. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, I'm going to focus on the films. And what I started to say is it's easy because it's all at the Liberty Theater, which is on 12th and Commercial in Astoria, and you can get tickets at the door, or you can go to GOAIFF, that's Astoria International Film Festival, .com, or you can go to libertyastoria.org, all of the above, and get tickets in advance, or just read about these films if you happen to have Coast Weekend. I'm sure you noticed that it hit the big time in there, too. So congratulations, Ron, for hanging in there all these years.
Thank you.
And bringing us, thank you for bringing us all of these good films. So the theme is the human spirit.
What? Yeah, it's I think every year we try to focus on a different area. And it's kind of low key at the same time, because as far as crossing different areas, I think what we like to do is just bring some attention to some of the things that I don't like to use the term as far as the media. It's just sort of from a historical perspective. And I think when people see that, it puts a lot of things that it currently that we're dealing with as far as, quote, the human spirit, that they can tie into and really have a better or deeper look into their own existence.
So how does that, how do you then choose the films? Or do you choose the films first and then give a title? Is that?
Well, pretty much the fact right now, it's kind of funny, even as the festival starts at 5 o'clock this afternoon, this evening, I'm already thinking about what I want to do for
next year.
And it's kind of an ongoing sort of roller coaster as far as looking at different things. I try not to really be too influenced by, shall we say, things that are just out here for a minute or so. Once again, as far as looking at things from a historical perspective, a lot of times there's things that have slid under the radar, typically with people, and they're not aware of.
For example,
we have the film I'm Not Your Negro, and it's a story about documentary. Raoul Peck done this film documentary about James Baldwin. Well, James Baldwin was pretty much sort of a flashpoint individual writer. And somebody said the black intellectual. Well, he wasn't a black intellectual. He was an intellectual. End of conversation.
Absolutely.
And the fact of being able to look at this person and through his eyes, and knowing that he was close to a number of the people, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr., to know that he had a perspective that most people never saw, and to be able to get his read on it and actually put it out now to people to re-examine it, because history, once again, is for us to go back and learn from.
Yeah, and I'm very excited about that, because I just happened to cross paths with James Baldwin in Turkey in the 60s. He was living there, and I just, by good fortune, I really got to know his brother a little bit. But when I saw this, I thought, wow, this is 50 years later. And the fact that he never finished this writing, and who is this filmmaker who picked it up and went with it, do you know?
Raoul Peck, he's a noted documentary filmmaker, and that's a question that comes up. And aren't we still people like, it was just sort of this destiny that happened. And
Kismet, speaking.
Absolutely.
Yep, absolutely.
And so I tend not to, I applaud that he stumbled upon it, you know, and we're the beneficiaries of that.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, he does an outstanding job, especially with the idea that a person of Baldwin's nature, as far as how he looked at things. And in looking at the film, he was pulled back into the whole cauldron of the racial disorder. Doing the 60s and so, because he was living in Paris then. But he had, as you'll see in the film, he said, like, I can't ignore this. Mm-hmm. It's too much. Having grown up in Harlem in the day, he had a really good sense of what was going on there. And the fact of having a personal relationship with the individuals, as far as they were all murdered. Yep. And to me, that in itself was such a social commentary that I could not allow that film to slip past and not present it here.
And I know that the Lower Columbia Diversity Coalition is supporting this film, too. Bruce, you're part of that group,
definitely.
Isn't it? Yeah. So last year, after, I can't remember what the name of the film was, but we had a wonderful discussion in the McTavish Room. I think that's the first time I met you, Bruce.
That's true. That was Equal Means Equal, and that was about the Equal Rights Amendment. And once again, it's one of those situations that it's the breadcrumbs that take us to where we are today, especially from empowering women, knowing that where they were and where they still can go. But knowing your history is very empowering. And with the idea that there is like a whole generation has missed that, and I say that no disrespect, it's just the idea that people don't realize how close they were to being able to pass that amendment. And what that does, it just empowers them to know that they're capable of getting that attention, and the fact that it's all so much of the history and it's factual.
Right. And after I Am Not Your Negro, you're also going to have an opportunity for discussion.
Absolutely. I find that when we bring films of this nature, like Equal Means Equal, is the fact that people, once they see the films, it's thought-provoking. Mm-hmm. And I do not want them to just go back and not be able to experience as far as the thought process with other people, because these are films are a part of our history that we need to re-examine. Because, like I said, it is our history. And I think to be able to do that, it allows you to be able to look at different aspects of that film and also to bring other people that you may know. So, guess what? I saw this incredible film. And so the circle is, it becomes very broad after a while.
Well, and having the discussion time with people who have just seen the film. Mm-hmm. I didn't know most of the people in the room, and it was all ages, all backgrounds, and it was wonderful because people saw different things, people had questions, and there were other people there to answer the questions. So I highly recommend that folks take advantage of this. This is a rare opportunity to see a deep and thoughtful film and have the opportunity to sit around with others who are interested and discuss and learn and then be able to share
what
you know. So, yeah. So that's happening on Saturday.
Yes, that's on Saturday. Along with the same line, we're actually doing another film that kind of goes along that sort of awareness, Neither Wolf Nor Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it deals with Native America or indigenous people here, Lakota, for to be exact. And it's awakening of an individual who has been secured to do a consolidation of an oral history that this tribal elder has comprised. And it's just really interesting because the gentleman who was doing it is white, and he is very aware of certain things as far as from the historical perspective of Native Americans. Yet he walked away from that enlightened, totally.
Totally. So, and the other exciting part, because I had heard of before, but I haven't seen it. I'm really looking forward. And that's showing on Saturday and Sunday.
Yes.
So, folks, you must look at the schedule, or just, better yet, come to the whole thing. the lead of that film is actually an elder, an indigenous elder, Lakota. I don't know if he's Lakota, but he's definitely an elder, a tribal nation.
Absolutely.
And that's exciting.
Yeah.
He's not an actor, but he became one for the show.
I told a colleague of mine the idea, I told him, I said, this is not the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, right. Holy moly. No, and not even close. Okay, so, and then tonight, starting at 5, which is only a little over an hour from now, at the Liberty Theater, this incredible international film festival, 11th annual. And can you just give the name of the films tonight?
The films tonight, we're going to open up with A Man Called Ova, which is our international film, and it's a Swedish film with English subtitles. And it's once again, it's a coming of age, and at the same time, the gentleman had lost his wife and things of that nature, and as far as dealing with it.
Yeah.
And
then, I just want to mention, I did see the trailer.
Right.
It's another must-see. Yeah. And then?
And then we have Dinah, who is also, it came from the Sundance Film Festival.
Right.
It's another kind of coming of age. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday, we go to the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival,
right.
Which is a consolidation of shorts we have there. And then we have, of course, I'm Not Your Negro. And then we, once again, Neither Wolf Nor Dog, we play that. And Noble Spirit, that's about a man here from Oregon and stuff who died from ALS, was very poignant.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of close up and get down to the point of
the food.
James Beard. You know?
James Beard. There's one tonight that you missed.
Oh.
Before Dina or Dinah.
Whiplash.
Whiplash. Yeah. Oh, my God. If you've ever played music or if you've ever been scared to play music, this sounds like the film for you. I can't recommend it enough. Go to AIFF.com or go AIF.com or to the Liberty Theater, LibertyAstoria.org. Check it out or just show up today at 5, buy your ticket, and then you'll want to buy the whole schmear. Mm. Now, before I... Yeeks, I looked at the clock and I said, oh my God, I've got Bruce here. And this is happening next weekend. Thanks so much, Ron. And you're going to try to escape because you have to be at the theater. Okay, that means Bruce will have to give him credit because Ron's actually, I understand, the one who inspired
to
get started on this.
What happened was... Ron and I were introduced through a mutual friend, and we started talking. And actually, last year, after the discussion, we talked a little bit more. And Ron said, you know, one of the things I'd like to do would be a jazz festival. And I said, oh, great. You know, that sounds wonderful. I said, I'll volunteer.
And he jumped out of his skin, I bet.
Right. And had no idea what the concept of volunteering meant. I volunteered for many things. But this is one. This is a labor of love. So,
yeah.
It is, it's coming up. We have the 27th, 28th, and 29th.
Mm-hmm.
We are holding the jazz festival in 6 different venues. And our feature performer, Katerina New, will be at Kala on the 28th. And tickets are available for that at the Liberty Theater box office. Or you can buy tickets at the door, but I would not suggest waiting because
it's a small venue,
and it is a wonderful venue, by the way. I am so
absolutely
impressed with that venue.
Absolutely.
But it's perfect for this quartet.
And people will be coming from elsewhere because Bruce knows folks.
Yeah.
And the musicians are coming from Portland.
Yes.
And so they will be bringing their own people with them. So get your tickets. So the best place is at Liberty Astoria.
Yeah.
Or you can go over to the box office at Liberty if you're right here.
Exactly.
And catch one of those. And are you involved in jazz in your life? Or did you just think...
I'm not a musician. I'm that essential piece of the equation called the audience.
I
was fortunate. I grew up in New York in the 60s and was exposed to incredible music at a very early age. So I have been inoculated, shall we say, with fantastic jazz and fantastic music. So it's a part of me, a very integral part of me.
Well, I am delighted, and I'm really glad, as I mentioned to you before, that you had no idea what you were getting into. Because
that's
you probably
true.
Wouldn't have gone for it.
Yes.
But this is so exciting. Again, this is the first annual Astoria Jazz Festival. And does it have a website? You can go to coastradio.org and read about it, too. But what's the website?
The website is AstoriaJazzFestival.info.
Oh, okay.
Dot info. Not .com, not
right.
.net, dot
okay,
info.
That's good.
Yes.
That's original.
Yeah. And we also have a Facebook page. that has additional information on it. Another thing I want to say is that the doors open for our feature performance on Saturday at 6:30 because we have an incredible caterer doing doing food, soul food.
Oh, Lanisha.
Lanisha, yes. Lanisha is doing soul food. So my suggestion is come early, come hungry for both good food and good music because both will be offered.
Okay.
Last thing I want to say, Carol, is that we also have another performer coming in from Portland for both Friday and Saturday night at Carruthers. And that's Rebecca Hardiman.
Right.
And Rebecca is a jazz songstress, stylestress. She is incredible. I just, I was listening to Marcia Hocker on KBOO. I did an interview with Marcia a few days ago, and she was talking about Rebecca, and she said that Rebecca is just mesmerizing.
Oh,
her ability to scat, her ability to take a tune and take it where she wants it and put her own thing to it is incredible.
Well, I have to say that we here at Coast Community Radio, we do feature jazz from 6 to 8, Monday through Thursday, and then other times as well. I think Bruce was on the show with Janine the other day.
I heard you.
And I know Pam Trenary has been working closely with Bruce and the festival, and I've even been playing some of the music. Right now, as a matter of fact, you are hearing from Katarina, and what we're listening to is Joy Dance. So, wow. It's going to be a fantastic festival. And it, remember, it's the first annual. Be there if you can. You won't be sorry.
Yes, be
Thank you so much, Bruce, for
doing this and
coming in and for taking the challenge.
Thank you. And I just want to give a shout out to KMUN for being so supportive of this effort. Thank you.
Great. Okay. And I'm going to keep that music going in the background. I'm just going to let you know a couple of other things that are happening. And tonight, of course, the Astor Street Opry, it's the last weekend for the Birds. The Coaster is featuring Blythe Spirit for this and next weekend. Manzanita is having a film festival, too, at the Hoffman, 7:30 tonight. Wandering Real sounds wonderful. There is a Hispanic celebration at Chautauqua Lodge tonight. Bob Pyle at Gala, the very same venue we were just talking about. And he'll be at the library from 5 to 6. AAMC is featuring a contra dance from 7 to 10 with the Clatsop County String Band. And the Voodoo is featuring Jim Yitzdi and friends tomorrow. Isabel and Paul are having a art sale from 2 to 5 in the Greenhouse on 2nd and Bond. There's Tango, Class, and Milango at the AAMC. The Hoffman is featuring Diana Abu-Jaber. And the Kenner Beach History Center has Archaeology Day. Hi-Hi is having Indigo Movie Night with Iris Sullivan at 4 o'clock. That's our light friends. Christine Trexel has a box workshop at Astoria Art Loft from 9:30 to 4. And also Stan Riedesel with Painting Boats in Watercolor all tomorrow. Kenner Beach Community Church is featuring Stephen Buse on their Steinway at 6 o'clock tomorrow. And Peninsula Performing Arts Center, Bree Gregg and the Brotherhood, Jazz and Blues. Hoffman has Fiber Arts from 2 to 4 Sunday. Sunday, Fort George, of course, Sunday. They also, Liz Cole is at the Hoffman on Wednesday, and Liberty Readers Theater, I saw it last night. Don't miss it. Wednesday and Thursday, The Turn of the Screw, not for children. Thanks for being here. Coast Community Radio. KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, your radio station.